65,498 square miles. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. Broadcasting live from Media Row at the Panther Arena inside the RNC. WTMJ at the Republican National Convention. This is Spanning the State. Here are your hosts, Brian Noonan and Kristen Bryan.
Good afternoon. Here we are, day three. We are halfway through, Brian.
It's been a good time so far. We are in Panther Arena here at the Republican National Convention.
Media Row.
We've got a huge show.
We do have a huge show.
So let's tease the show real quick.
Absolutely.
Because our guests are unparalleled.
So our first guest is going to be Kathleen Kingsbury, who is the head of opinion at the New York Times.
Wow.
So we are going to talk to her about everyone has opinions. How does one get published in the New York Times?
I don't know. I've been giving mine away for free. I really need to get some press.
And then after that, later in the hour, we're going to be talking to Pam Yonke, our usual monthly check-in
with
the fabulous Farm Babe, but specifically with a little bit more of a political slant because, you know, when in Rome.
Exactly.
And so we're going to talk about how specifically Republican platform will impact negatively or positively farmers.
And then we'll spin the state as we always do. We're going to talk to the man who is responsible for the big balloon drop tomorrow, the man who has done this for 10 RNCs in a row. And then we'll find out what it takes to draw young people into the Republican Party when the national board member for the Young Republicans joins us too.
Yeah.
So a lot
Stacked
to get
show.
To. Yesterday was fun because we both had an experience that we've never had before.
And may never have again.
I'm guessing it's never going to be again for me, but we were on the convention floor at separate times, but it was, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on, because I've gotten comments, I know you've gotten comments from people saying, how could you say you were excited to be there? This is history. This is what democracy is supposed to be. And yes, it may not be my team, but I could appreciate the joy that was in all those delegates' faces, the pageantry that's going on, and the moment that is being met tomorrow night.
It's interesting because yesterday we were talking about where the good hockey seats are.
Yes.
Being up against the glass or being high up. And the day on Monday, we had the opportunity to walk through Fiserv and be
up.
Onlookers, right? Because
yes.
we did not have access to the floor. And there's a very different feeling of being on the floor and how close you are to the stage and the delegates, and just in general, if you've ever been to a sporting event, being in the action versus watching the action are two very different feelings.
Well, these were courtside seats, to say the least, and you went in later than I did. I was there before, just as everything was starting. So we were still able to walk around, and I was at the foot of the stage. And I kept thinking, this is insane that I'm here and there was a band playing and everybody's coming in their regalia and the Wisconsin service dog for the delegates was there. It wasn't lost on me what was happening in that room.
As someone who is not a detail-oriented person all the time, just the amount that goes, that is also what has been impressive to watch, is the amount of coordination and planning and execution that goes into something this big.
Exactly. Well, let's talk about the planning and coordination that goes into the New York Times opinion page. Did you like that segue? That was top-tier segue.
We need to start giving each other points for well-executed segues. But yes, when we come back, we will talk to Kathleen Kingsbury, head of opinion at the New York Times. It's Spanning the State.
It is Spanning the State live from the RNC. We are on Media Row. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry. And Brian, you know what they say about opinions, right?
I do, but I don't know if the boss wants us to say that.
Well, I'll, like a certain orifice.
Okay.
Everyone's got one.
Yes, that's true.
But not everyone's opinion gets published in the New York Times. So whose does? And I think our next guest can answer that for us. Kathleen Kingsbury is the head of opinion at New York Times, where she oversees the editorial board, guest essays, opinion columnists, letters to the editor, as well as opinion newsletters, audio, video, graphics, design, digital distribution teams. That's a lot.
That's a lot of opinions.
Welcome to the show, Kathleen.
Thank you so much for having me. It's my pleasure.
And so let's just start there. Let's start with, I just listed off everything that falls under opinion at the New York Times. And when we think about whose opinion gets published. Because reporting is reporting. Facts are facts. I get this happened, this didn't happen. But opinion is discretion. And so how does someone or an opinion rise to the level of getting published in arguably the paper of record?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to remind our listeners that at the Times, news and opinion are separate. So I report to the publisher, A.G. Sulzberger, as does Joe Kahn, the executive editor in the newsroom. And I like to make that distinction just because what we do is different than what our news colleagues are doing. And people often conflate the two. So, you know, you're asking a great question. I think what you're really referring to is our guest essay operation. We do a lot of different opinions, as you just listed off in the New York Times. But guest essays are outside contributors who we have most often gone to and commissioned because of their expertise or their experience, the ideas that they want to talk about. And that work is really done by my magnificent team of editors who we hire, again, mostly for their expertise. They are constantly looking around the corner, trying to bring out the stories and the ideas and the, you know, next most important conversation topics that they can in whatever their area of expertise is. So we have a health and science editor, we have a politics editor, we have a business and economics editor, a technology editor, really the gamut. And they're almost like reporters. They're going out and finding out what we should all be talking about, what the public should be talking about every day.
So we've mentioned numerous times, everybody has an opinion. Everybody also is used to getting good and bad feedback on those opinions. When it comes to something like the editorial board calling for President Biden to step down or having the George Clooney op-ed in there, how do you gauge the feedback, and has it ever gotten to the point where the amount of feedback you've gotten, usually I'm guessing in a negative way, made you rethink and question, oh, maybe we got that one wrong?
Well, you never want to be in that position,
right?
And so, to my mind, it's really important when you're going to publish something to feel like there's principle behind it. I spoke to Joe Biden in 2020, President Biden now, at our endorsement interview with him. I questioned him strongly about his age and really asked him how he was going to talk to the American voters about any concerns they had around his age. He didn't like that very much, and there's a transcript to show. we returned to that theme as an editorial board in April of 2023, and we said again, President Biden, if you're going to run for another term, talk directly to voters. Be transparent about their concerns about the age. You know, in the last few weeks, I've gotten a lot of a version of an argument that goes something like, the president had one bad night. Why are you comparing that to 3.5 years of accomplishments? The reality is voters have been saying for months, for years, mm-hmm. really, that they are concerned about his age. They're concerned about whether or not he's going to be able to stay in office for 4 more years. Right. And I think that the debate was a public demonstration that he has declined in the last 4 years, yes. and that he might not be up for the challenge of confronting Donald Trump as a candidate. And we've been very clear as an editorial board in numerous editorials that we believe that Donald Trump is a unique danger to American democracy, and we need a candidate who can defeat him.
Because then a couple weeks later, there was the editorial board had a Trump opinion.
Yes.
Despite the fact that, as you just said, there's been, those opinions are not new as far as where the stance of the editorial board on former President Trump. But was there a feeling like we needed to republish something to balance the Biden opinion?
No, absolutely not. So we had the Trump editorial that you are describing, in which we called Donald Trump unfit to lead, in the works for weeks. It was always planned, actually, to be published on the Sunday before the RNC, primarily because, and you're seeing it this week, yeah. right? There's a lot of myth-making about the first Trump administration around this idea that we were a more prosperous nation, that we somehow were peaceful in a way that we no longer are. And we know that's not true, right? It was 4 years of chaos. It was 4 years of people feeling vulnerable and weak. And people, we saw after he passed his tariffs, prices spiked. A lot of the economic damage that has been rectified in the last 3.5 years under the Biden administration started in the Trump era. right? So right now, the GOP is asking for its voters to essentially believe magical thinking, right? Which is like, there's no policy here. Right. There's no way, you know, there's no policy agenda that explains how housing is suddenly going to become affordable, how people are suddenly going to go to the grocery store and find prices lower again. And I think that's a key point about this election. It's not really a policy election. It's about personalities.
You mentioned that editor, that had been in the works for months. What's the timeline usually for the editorial board to get something from idea to publishing?
It really depends. You know, sometimes if it's news, so for instance, on Saturday, after the assassination attempt of the former president, we wrote an editorial within hours. It goes through a lot of editing. It goes through a comprehensive fact check. Opinion actually has the largest fact checking team at the New York Times.
Really?
Yeah. Accuracy is very important to us. Then, of course, it gets a copy editor, as these things do. And we turn that around, you know, in about 2.5 hours, and we publish because we wanted to condemn that shooting as soon as possible, you know, which we called antithetical to democracy. Then there are projects that do take weeks. As Kristen pointed out, Opinion is blessed. We have a large multimedia team, including video, graphics, audio, and we try to bring those into our more ambitious projects when we can.
We're talking to Kathleen Kingsbury, who is the head of Opinion at the New York Times. And so since we are in Wisconsin, is that part of the calculus at all? Like, does when you're thinking of Opinion and ideas are getting circulated, is how this Opinion could impact small town Wisconsin even part of the calculus? Maybe not specifically, but you know what I'm saying?
How does it play in Peoria?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think that that is something we bring in as one input, right? So this year, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, those are three of the most important states in terms of who is going to be in the White House come next January. So yes, we have been trying to do more coverage on the ground in those areas. We just did a tremendous video from Dearborn, Michigan, which essentially the message of was that there's no way Biden's going to win there. That people are not going to vote for him because of his stances on Gaza. And so we do try to bring in those voters' voices, and we do a series of focus groups about twice a month where we do try to bring in, you know, average Americans and try to present their views because we think that's important for our readers to hear as well. And then we do local coverage around things like press freedom and judicial issues all the time. You know, I think it's especially as there's less and less local outlets, media outlets, it's more important for us to try to do those when we can.
Well, now that you've traveled from New York back to Wisconsin, you have a lot of Wisconsin ties. You have some Wisconsin ties, right?
Yeah, I've been really lucky. Both my parents are from Wisconsin, and I get to spend my summers in Waukesha County.
Ooh.
Very nice.
Lake Country?
Yeah.
Okay. So as someone who works in Opinion, do you have a hot take or a hot opinion on how this week is going? In whether it can be about Wisconsin, it can be about
we don't do hot takes at the New York Times. But
can you do a thorough fact check opinion on cheese curds or brandy versus bourbon old fashions?
I think there could be better frozen custard in the perimeter of the convention. But you know, I think it's been very interesting. You guys were talking about being on the floor, and one of the things that I really felt when I was in the arena last night was just this air of jubilation, but also you just kept hearing things like divine intervention, and there's really a sense of invincibility, and that is something it's in the air. And the whether or not the party is going to be able to unite as a party versus again around one person, Donald Trump, that's still to be determined, but it was really, really surprising to me how sure so many delegates, so many elected officials, so many, you know, party leaders have said to me, well, we've got it in the bag now.
Yeah.
That's different than what you've seen in the past?
I think since the debate, the narrative has changed a lot.
Well,
Very nice.
That is a very strong opinion.
Yes, it is.
You did not evade the question. Kathleen Kingsbury is the head of opinion at New York Times. This has been great. What is there anything? We only have about 30 seconds left, but is there anything else that you're excited to looking forward to in the next 2 days?
I'm really excited to see Vance's speech tonight and understand what his message is going to be throughout this election.
All right. Well, we are looking forward to
that, Kathleen.
Too.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for your time today. All right. Signing Unlimited News Time is 1:26. This is Spanning the State.
Yes, we are at the Republican National Convention on Media Row inside the UW Panther Arena for day number 3. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry. And a reminder that Decision Wisconsin coverage presented by Pasternak and Zuckerbell. And what about once a month? We always catch up with our friend.
Yes.
The fabulous farm babe, Pam Yonke, from the Midwest Farm Report. And just because we're on site doesn't make that any different. And so we wanted to have another conversation with Pam, but since we are at the RNC, get some of her insight on how current politics, and more maybe specifically Republican policies, are impacting farmers. Welcome back, Pam.
Boy, good luck to you guys and all the throngs of humanity around you if you're right there on site.
There are throngs, Pam, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe it. In fact, some of the throngs are down in Waterford right now. They are at the Great American Farm Fair. At the Malsheen Farm, an actual operating farm. That's the first time in its 40-year history that they've actually ended up at a farm. So kind of glad that they're getting a chance to actually see and experience what Wisconsin agriculture can look like.
Pam, we had we're going to play it later, but since you brought up the farm, I talked to a delegate from American Samoa yesterday, and that was one of the things he pointed out that he really liked about his visit. He said, "I loved going to the farm."
Nice. Yeah, well, very good. I'm glad that they have that impression. There's a lot of different groups, different commodity organizations and associations that are working collectively to try to make it attractive. And it's not just in case people think that it's only about policy. It is not. This experience at the Malsheen Farm is also about education and trying to help those folks that are coming from Washington, D.C. and the concrete capital understand the technology, the advancements, all of that that's going on in agriculture today. So if it weren't for the crowds and just the overall angst I have about that many people in one spot, I might have been there myself.
You're like, I'm a farm girl at heart. I don't want to be in all these claustrophobic,
yes.
close proximity. All right, so... Let's talk, let's talk a little bit about politics and policy and the impact it is having on farmers, because I think farmers, like veterans and some, there's certain groups that I think get a lot of attention during campaigns, and how does that end up playing out in the policies that actually get passed? And so what is kind of top of mind for you or from what you're hearing from other farmers when it comes to actual politics and how it's impacting Wisconsin farmers?
Tell you this, top of hat right now is the lack of attention on agriculture. I mean, first time around for Trump, he was at farms and he was making stops in a lot of rural communities. Neither candidate has spent much time focusing on agriculture. I get it. I understand that we're less than 2% of the population, but it's still a major economic driver for the United States. So I know that that's something that's been noticed. I think that the concern about what's going to happen with international policy can't be ignored for either party. Right now, U.S. agriculture, Wisconsin agriculture depends heavily on the international marketplace for any kind of premiums or, enhanced markets that we're going to see. Remember, Wisconsin dairy is a good example. We have started to find more and more opportunity on the international marketplace, but it's a precarious balance, so you got to make sure you keep those relationships healthy. There's environmental issues. Right now, after Supreme Court rulings, production agriculture is bringing agencies like the Bureau of Land Management into the court system to try to rein in some of their oversights. So there's a lot of different elements on the federal scene that candidates are definitely going to influence with their next administration or the current administration, whichever it should be. And agriculture is paying attention to that, not the least of which, of course, Kristen, is the fact that we don't have any traction at all on the farm bill. This baby, it's like a 13-month pregnancy. You just want to get it done, and we cannot get any traction whatsoever. And I can't. I mean, you can point fingers wherever you want, but just nobody is willing to engage. And part of it is what's happening today. Just trying to help people from a concrete jungle understand what agriculture looks like today, what it's involving, and trying to get them to just even want to engage in something that impacts farmers' lives day to day, not just the EBT cards, not just SNAP, not just women, infants, and children, although that's a big responsibility USDA bears, but to try to reconnect at the imports the Farm Bill makes on day-to-day operations right here in Wisconsin.
All right, Pam, we don't have all day, but let's point a few fingers. Who is holding up? You know, where do we start with the holdup for this Farm Bill?
You know, I thought we were on our way. Honest to God, I really did. I thought we were on our way to at least getting something done before we fall into the throes of the election battles. Basically, it has, and I hate to point fingers because I don't like politics, but it has been the Democratic Party that has started to really pull back on any kind of cross-the-aisle cooperation on moving it forward. Every time we take a step, they bring something up that's generally connected to the social programs within the Farm Bill, and that turns into a battle. Budgets cannot go up under the Farm Bill. We have what we have, and that is all we have. So whenever anybody says we need more, that's got to come from somebody else. And that's where we seem to get stymied in the process. And again, like I said, Debbie Stabenow is not going to be running again. She's the lead senator from Michigan. And if she's not willing to play or work any kind of compromise, that spells a death knell for any progress in 2024 on a farm bill.
So then, Pam, one of the headlines I've seen a couple different times from a couple different outlets is immigration is front and center in this campaign, this is election year, and specifically immigration and illegal immigration's impact on farming. Do you think that story is overdone, overblown, or accurate?
No, it's completely accurate as far as the frustration of agriculture, but I think that's the frustration of anybody in the business sector that depends on immigrant labor. Farmers have been very clear. Get us a process. The H-2A program does not work for Wisconsin because Wisconsin farmers need employees year-round, not 6 months out of the year like they do in some of the southwest states for harvesting, for example. We need them 12 months out of the year. We want them 12 months out of the year. We want a clear path on how they can legally be able to do that. We want clear guidance on how they can get things like a driver's license. Farmers want to do right by the law, but somebody's got to give them the law. And that's where they are caught between a rock and a hard spot. And like I said, in Wisconsin, we are the dairy industry. And they, in policy, do not understand how they think H-2A is great or they think their programs are great. They're just not recognizing we need somebody to milk cows and take care of calves 12 months out of the year.
All right, Pam, always good to talk to you. We will we'll get back to you again in a couple weeks.
In August, when
this blows by, maybe we'll talk to you from the Democratic convention, just so we can expose you to more crowds and more angst.
Yeah. And more politics, as you despise so much.
Good luck to you all. Have fun.
Thanks, Pam. You can listen to Pam every morning.
Every morning from 5 to 6, right here on WTMJ, the Midwest Farm Report. Starting at limited news time, 1:44. It's spanning the state.
The mayor, Magaville, baby. Hey, you know who we voting for?
We voting Donald Trump, baby.
America needs safety.
Oh, I'm getting all turned out. I don't even know if that's the correct
terminology. I don't know if that's the right terminology.
I don't think so, but I'll tell you what. I'm fire with this song. That is, listen, we're getting funky fresh here on the floor of the Media Row at UW Panther Arena. It's spanning the state at the RNC. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry, and we are playing that song.
Why are we playing that song?
We are playing that song. I think it's number 8 on Spotify right now.
Really?
Amber Rose, who made lots of waves this week, is featured on the song, but it is the rapper that you just heard is Forgiato Blow, who is a Florida rapper, and you may know him as the mayor of MAGA.
Oh, I did not know. I did not know him that way.
You may just know him as the Trumpiest Trump rapper. that's out there. I think all of his music is about Trumpism and Trump.
Okay.
And not a big shock. He is here.
What? No, that doesn't shock me at all.
And Rhea and I ran into him yesterday, and so I got to interview him a little bit. And if you have no idea who I'm referencing.
I don't.
You've sorry. Never seen this guy?
No.
So I forgot what year he became popular, his first big song.
All right, I've seen him.
You've seen him before.
I saw him during the last campaign.
So he is covered in tattoos, specifically covered in face tattoos, big beard. He wears a massive gold chain with a gold head of Donald Trump wearing the red MAGA hat.
Well, we don't worship false idols, Kristen.
Yes. And so, and he, as I said, just has a new song out.
Okay.
Amber Rose is on the song.
Nice.
But there was one part that he said yesterday when we were interviewing him about, you know, I think typically we think of Democrats as the big tent party.
Sure.
But he kind of alluded to Republicans need to be a big tent party.
Are you excited to hear Nikki Haley tonight?
You know, that's like the old me would have been like, no. And the old me would have been like, I don't want to hear no one that ever hates on Trump. But the new me is like, yeah, we need all these people. We need all these Trump supporters. We need people at one time might not have supported Trump, right, or went against Trump in opposition. And we're so quick to be like, oh, we don't need them. We need them. We need more voters. My new video has Amber Rose in it. Some people
You got to meet her? I tried to interview her.
I got a music video with her. She did it last week. Called Trump, Trump, Baby. It's number 8 right now on the iTunes charts. Yep.
There you go.
So, you know, I'm plugged
in. Is it like Ice Baby?
Trump, Trump, Baby. So go check it out. But at the end of the day, it's like, I hear a lot of people say, you know, J.D. Vance said this stuff about Trump. Why is he the VP? I think that showed a lot of growth from Trump to be able to have somebody not like you at some time, and then you have him as your running mate and bring him in. It shows that there's a lot of people that thought like J.D. Vance, too. They're going to vote where J.D. Vance is going now, right? Because a lot of people out here don't understand. Not everybody's going to be where we want them. So when we push real hard with our content to get people to buy into Trump, then we finally get someone to buy in, you're like, you've been hating on Trump for 5 years. You can't like Trump. No, our job works. So we got to bring these people in. We can't just let them just push away.
That was Forgiato Blow, the Florida rapper, Florida Trump rapper, I think.
Sure.
And it was interesting when he said that. One, because I would say, I don't know how you feel about this, but in walking around, being inside, the variety of ages, variety of races, like it is a more diverse crowd than I think the stereotype usually goes of the Republican Party.
I will agree with that 100%.
And it was interesting to me of what he was saying as far as trying to be more inclusive,
okay,
and also allow people to grow into having one time been critical of Trump and now growing into and like still wanting them to be part of the party. And it just got me thinking as far as which party is more inclusive or exclusive in 2024.
Well, first of all, to go back to what you were saying about his thought of bringing people in who may have been against, I think turning those people around is not really happening. They're all turning it around, and I think we all know this, for purely political purposes. That's all. But
the politicians.
The politicians. Regular people, when they turn, it's usually genuine or for some reason. But I'm talking the politicians.
Yeah.
You know, because he referenced Nikki Haley,
J.D. Vance.
Yeah, so they're doing it for pure politics. To the inclusivity part, I think I would default to the old way of thinking that it was the Democrats. But in recent history, the far left wing of the Democrats has been very quick to cancel everybody and to banish you if you did not fall in line, much like the far right of the Republican Party. So it goes back to what we talked about yesterday with people in the middle, the people who are lost in the middle. That group seems to be able to accept things in a more rational way than the far ends of either side.
Ideologues.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if there's a difference anymore. I'm still going to side with the Democrats.
That they're more inclusive.
By a hair. It's not a landslide. Much like the election we're going to have in November, this one is close.
I think it's interesting what he said as far as it being understanding that we need as many,
yes,
on either side,
both
either
parties.
Party is that we need as many votes as we can get. And so in being responsive, how it's supposed to work, right, is that we make policies, we make we have open arms for people to join the party and feel welcome joining the party, because when you're fighting for every vote, you want a bigger tent.
Yes.
And that becomes harder to appeal to so many people. I mean, obviously, we saw that with the platform's softer stance on abortion.
Yes.
But also, it's reflective of maybe where the people are. So, all right. Well, when we come back, what are we going to do, Brian?
We are going to spin the state.
All right. It's spanning the state.
It's time to take a spin around Wisconsin and find stories you might have missed. This is WTMJ at the Republican National Convention. Now broadcasting live from Media Row at the Panther Arena inside the RNC. Here's Spinning the State on Spanning the State with Kristen Bry and Brian Noonan.
Comfortable with Big Voice giving such specific locations of where we are. He really geo-tracked us on that intro. But yes, we do spin the state every day after 2. And if you miss anything, and today, you're definitely going to want to text SPIN to 855-616-1620, because one of the stories is audience participation. Yes, there's a tease for you. But let's spin the wheel and see where we're going first.
Oshkosh.
Oshkosh. Well, it's Wednesday, and that means another day. This whole thing has gotten me all thrown off. Since last week, I've been a day off with thinking it's a day later. Anyway, it's another day. It's another story. Guess what? School staffing shortages and how districts are trying to fix them. Today's dilemma, based in Oshkosh. The Oshkosh Area School District is fighting to fix this, but right now they have a few openings for the coming year. They're looking for teachers at all levels, elementary, middle, high school. They're looking for school counselors, special education teachers, substitute. Basically, if you're a human being who works in a school, Oshkosh needs you. So, to help fill those roles, the district is holding 2 job fairs at the administrative office on Eagle Street. The first one is tomorrow from 4 to 6. The second one scheduled for August 1st, same time, 4 to 6. Applicants will be able to meet with HR staff, principals, and other district staff members to learn about all the open positions. There are immediate start dates. So if you are an educator or involved in education and are anywhere near Oshkosh or want to move to Oshkosh, they are looking for people. No registration is required for these job fairs. So good luck.
All right.
You want to go to Oshkosh, be a special ed teacher, a gym teacher?
I think school. I like my job.
Okay.
I got a pretty good job.
You got a lot of jobs. I didn't know if you wanted to add another line to your resume.
I had a commute. What the hell is that?
You could teleconference and be a counselor. That way you don't have to actually
be the drama teacher.
Yeah, there you go. Just bring her up on the smart board, and there you go.
All right.
I need a monologue.
All right, spin it.
Suamico.
All right. Well, she may not write the songs that make the whole world sing, but she teaches kids how to play them. Ashley Segrist, a PAM teacher at Bayport High School in the Green Bay, is the Green Bay winner of the Manilow Music Project Teacher Award, as in Barry Manilow. That is right. The award comes with a $10,000 grant from the Manilow Fund and tickets to Barry's performance in Green Bay. So there was 10 local high schools in cities where Manilow's current tour is stopping, and they were invited to submit the names of their favorite music teacher and then voted to select the winner. So as the Green Bay winner, Segrist will receive $5,000 to use as she chooses. The school received $5,000 for new instruments, and she will be honored during Manilow's last in Green Bay show. So that is super fun. Manilow launched the program in response to a friend's request to get a saxophone for his high school daughter. Oh, Barry, you came and you gave without taking. Oh Barry.
Thank you for being so gay. That was 100% right on the money. Very good. See, and you said a couple weeks ago you could not sing, and now we have disproved that. Myth busted. Congratulations for being a gamer. All right, spin it one more time, Maria.
Sandy. Wausau.
I love this story. This is the audience participation part of Spinning the State today. So, most of us remember, even if it's not so fondly, the 1992 classic, Achy Breaky Heart. Do you remember?
Don't break my heart.
Don't tell my heart.
Oh, okay.
Oh, my.
See, you almost got me singing twice in one segment.
Yeah, if you want, go ahead.
No.
No more
the
solos?
Lost.
All right, well, you did great on the first one. Anyway, we also remember the iconic hairstyle of the singer Billy Ray Cyrus, the mullet. Yes, the mullet, known for being business in the front and party in the back, has mostly gone out of style, except for carnies and people who work at alligator parks. And, most importantly, one 11-year-old boy in Wausau who is competing to become Kids Mullet Champion. See, this is the kind of thing you can start training Frankie for. These are the ideas that get your kid, you know, on a path to something.
Should I give Frankie a mullet?
I mean,
don't put it past Mike and I to use our kid for humor.
Mullet her up now when she's young and it won't scar her forever.
Okay.
Because once you get...
It's better than a bowl cut, right?
Yeah, I think so. And Jude Carlson, he's not embarrassed. This kid has been working on his world-class blonde mullet since the pandemic began because, as he said, he was bored. So that boredom turned into a follicle fixation and now his flowing locks reach the middle of his back. Jude told WAOW that he gets inspiration from his love of rock and roll and his hairstylist mom, but here's where you come in. He needs your help to win the championship. Why should you vote for Jude? Well, he doesn't mince words. Quote, "You should vote for me because I have the best mullet in the contest. We all know it, but I have to be a good sport," end quote. So if he wins, Jude plans to split the $5,000 prize between saving for college and a donation to St. Jude. So that's a good reason. And you got to do me a favor. If you've never texted SPIN to 855-616-1620, do it today. Vote for Jude and check out the picture of his mullet.
I just opened it.
It is insane.
It's pretty great.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
And it is, oh man.
It's luscious.
He is definitely business up top, and he is a party in the back. So there you go.
Vote for Jude.
Tomorrow night, if you're watching the convention, you know that as soon as Donald Trump makes his speech, the entire Pfizer Forum will be rained on by thousands of balloons. How did they get there? Why did they pick that color? Why balloons? I don't know. But the man behind it, Treb Heining, is going to join us after this to tell us all about the big balloon drop. It is Spanning the State.
I feel like we need to get to the chorus, but we don't have time.
No, we have to get
to the
man.
Because it is Spanning the State. We are live at Media Row in UWM Panther Arena at the RNC. I am Kristen Bride.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And, of course, that's Nina 99 Luftballons. Or do you say red balloons?
I've said both.
I like the German version. I don't know why. Anyway, tomorrow and at every convention and at the Super Bowl and at all kinds of huge events, we are used to seeing the balloon drops. And I have never really given a lot of thought to the balloon drop or how the balloons got up there. I just thought the balloon fairy came and left them, and then it was, oh, this is very exciting. But that's not the case. A lot of work goes into creating those balloon drops. And the man who has done the balloon drop at the last 10 Republican National Conventions joins us now. Treb Heining is here. Treb, welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, it's my pleasure to be here, Chris and Brian. Thank you so much for having me.
You are welcome. So you've been doing drops, like I said, for the RNC since 1988. How did that partnership come about?
Well, you know, it started by them calling me. I was I've got an invented balloon decorating and stuff back in the late 70s and the early 80s. We were doing, you know, work everywhere in the country and all over the place. We were making quite a name for ourselves. And I got a call from a guy out of Washington, D.C. named Mark Good. And he flew me back to D.C. and said we want to do something spectacular for the Superdome. I think it was, who was running back then? Anyway, it was the end of Reagan's deal. I think it was George Bush, his first term and all that. Anyway, so we did a big thing for the Superdome in New Orleans, and that's what started it off. I mean, we pushed the boundaries. I think we did 200,000 balloons at that one, and then that's how it all got started, you know?
So you just mentioned the Superdome. So you've said that convention drops are more stressful than the Super Bowl. Why is that?
It's just the nature of the beast. I mean, everywhere you go, you have to have this credential. You have to get this, and you can't go here. You can go there. It's like, you know, okay. I joke with my wife. I say, when I get home from these conventions, I always like getting up in the middle of the night and not having to show a credential to go to the bathroom, you know. So it's just there's a level of security and all that stuff on top of it. Plus, when they say thank you very much and God bless America, you're my heart's in my throat. You know, you just want to pull off a good show is what you want to do, you know. So,
well, I saw the balloons yesterday up in the netting on the roof of Fiserv. How much input does like the RNC or the host committee have in the design, and or do they leave it all to you and your creative vision for what colors and what pattern is going to be in the drop?
You know, this time some people like the mixed red, white, and blue. Some people like the solids of the nets. And then, you know, so that's discussed. We showed them some other product that I deal a lot in Japan. I have products from over there, and we did some really cool balloons from there. We did some cool printed balloons. And this year, they left it up to me when we called the drop, and so I'm going to be mixing it up. So you'll see just solid colors coming down at one point, and then mixtures of colors. And we have something like 58 different containers up there, 58 different nets. So it's not going to all come down at once. It'll be done in a choreographed manner that will be very cool on television.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, my question was, so we covered the story as far as the MPS students who helped blow up the balloons that will be dropping tomorrow night. But obviously, it's not helium. And so is it truly that they were blowing them these thousands, tens of thousands of balloons one by one with their own mouth?
No. We have a system that we developed. Actually, yeah, we developed a system back in '88, and we still use it to this day, where we're up in the highest level of the arena, and you're sitting in a chair just like you would be watching a basketball game, but there's a little valve in front of you on a post, and you push it down, the air comes out there, hooked up to a big compressor, and then we have these funnels that hang. A funnel hangs over the side, and they throw the balloon into the funnel, and it has a net hanging from below it. So when the net fills up, then we drop that net down, put another net on. So you can inflate a lot of balloons very easily with this system. It's very cool.
So no one's right, signing a release form that they may pass out from black box shit.
No,
well, the pictures they published had looked like they were blowing up, and we were like, oh, they're going to pass out. Those kids are going to drop.
No, then and this group of students from the Milwaukee School District, they're the ambassadors that they've been trained to show people the city and this and that, and they're all either seniors or just graduated from high school. I've never worked with a greater group of kids. They were wonderful. They had a great time. You know, people are interviewing them. They're on camera, and yeah, and that's what it's all about. We like to show people the inner workings of a convention like this, because when you're there, you feel the power of what these conventions do and everything. So it was really fun to share that with them.
Now, you've done some Democratic conventions too, Treb. Is there a difference? Does one party want one kind of balloon and another party likes another? Or is it just, hey, we just want colorful, we want them to rain down and make it look pretty?
You know, it's both the same, you know, what you're saying. I mean, there's different people on the committees each time, different creative people. I always like to do different things. I always like to bring things and say, let's not do the same, because that keeps it fresh for us and also for the client that I'm working for. But both parties, they're really very, very cool people to work for. And in this one, Phil Alonji, who's running the show here, is just a dear, dear friend. And he's a legend from NBC. He was with that company for so many years. So anyway, I'm lucky that I get to work with people like this. They're just really, really creative people to work with.
Well, Trev, it's been a pleasure talking to you. This was a story I had never thought about, but we're glad that we did see it, and we're glad we talked to you. Good luck. Maybe we'll see you at the next convention.
Oh, I hope so. And tell your listeners to Google my name, Treb Heining, and you'll have 14 pages of stuff to read about what I've done with balloons in my life. But I'm a happy camper, and I'm a lucky guy.
Very nice. Well, we will definitely do it. Thanks, Treb. Treb Heining designed the big balloon drop for tomorrow night's closing ceremonies here at the Republican National Convention. We'll come back, and we met the guy who may have won the prize for the farthest journey to get to the convention. We'll do that after this. It's Spanning the State.
It's Spanning the State live from the RNC. I am Kristen Bry.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And as we've been wandering around inside the perimeter, we've seen delegates from all over. Some you can identify, the Wyoming, Texas, and I think Oklahoma contingents all have cowboy hats. You saw a woman in a hoop skirt.
Mm-hmm.
I met a man yesterday who may have won the prize unofficially for farthest traveled to be here. Donald Cruze is a delegate from American Samoa. And
not
wonderful
close.
Guy, not close at all. How far did he come?
First of all, how long did it take you to get from American Samoa to Milwaukee?
15 hours, plane only.
Wow.
So we traveled 7,000 plus miles to get here.
7,000 plus miles to get here, 15 hours by plane. I'm guessing you have never been to Milwaukee before.
No. I've been to the East Coast, but not Milwaukee.
What has been your impression so far since you've been here?
Good. I love the weather. I love the farm. And, it's nice.
What's been the most memorable thing you've experienced so far?
The food.
Like, such as?
We were at the public market, and we had some steaks there.
Some steak. Yeah. Now, if I were to come to American Samoa, what would the meal that I would have to have be?
You would have taro and what we call palusami. It's like spinach-like, but mixed with coconut milk. And that's our, very popular dish.
Very nice. I have to ask, have you tried cheese curds yet?
No, not yet. So it's something that I need to check upon? Okay.
You have to try some cheese curds and have an old-fashioned. But tomorrow or Thursday night is Donald Trump's big speech.
Yes.
He's going to accept the nomination. What do you project that he's going to say? What do you predict he might say?
He said it was going to be the same thing. He was looking forward to it. He enjoyed his visit to Milwaukee, and he said everyone should come to American Samoa because it's beaches and palm trees and beautiful, and maybe we'll do that. But we have more to do here from Media Row, and we'll do it after ABC News and local headlines.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. We are live from UWM Panther Arena on Media Row at the RNC. I am Kristen Bry.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And at the risk of hopefully not offending our guest, there's an old saying. If you're not a Democrat when you're young, you have no heart. If you aren't a Republican when you're old, you have no brain. There's likely a lot of people from both sides of the aisle who disagree with that adage, including our next guest, Nick Rettinger. He is the current Young Republicans National Federation Vice Chair, the former Young Republicans Wisconsin State Chairman, and current Wisconsin State Representative of the 83rd Assembly District. Nick, thanks for being here. All right. How do you feel about that old adage?
Well, I definitely feel that it's something that's just, from a bygone era.
You know,
I feel like it's based in, the stereotypes that have always existed out there. And I think, some of the polling, I actually got asked on this morning during our media availability after our breakfast this morning, that polling is showing that a lot of younger folks are breaking our way. And I think that comes from the economic struggles that we've seen and the folks in my generation as a millennial as well as Gen Z, people who are young professionals in their 20s and 30s, they're trying to buy homes, they're trying to start families, they're trying to, keep a job for a long period of time because there's been, constant layoffs and cycling like that, as well as then climb the ladder and find that success in life, carry out building that American dream. They have just not had that over the last several years in comparison to the success they found before. And so I think we're shattering those stereotypes with just the harsh realities people have been facing, and they're looking to move in a new direction, and I think they're excited about the messaging and the ideas that we bring to the table.
And I want to get back to that because that's a reversal from the last couple of election cycles. But before we talk about young people in general, let's talk about you as a young person. And so what is it about the Republican Party that you align with? And have you always, since
you know, being a teenager.
Yes, yes, I have. And I feel like, you know, while the again, what has been kind of the classic saying, where the GOP, the grand old party, I think we are now becoming the great opportunity party. And I think looking to empower individuals, supporting, you know, the free market system and wanting to make sure that folks can you know, pursue their American dream and, you know, pursue the opportunities that are out there, I think is something that our party brings to the table, whereas the Democrats have become overly reliant on dividing people by groups and classes, as well as just making them reliant on the government, opposed to allowing people to take control of their own destinies and lives. And so I think people who, particularly who are young, especially in the gig economy or, and, you know, with social media, where people want to be able to put out their own materials, do their own thing, I think that really fits well with what our party brings to the table.
So, Nick, we know in the last few elections, young voters have really turned out, and they've turned out for Democrats more than Republicans. So, knowing that, what do the Republicans, and especially young Republicans like yourself, have to do to try to bring those, that youth vote to your side?
No, absolutely. I feel like, you know, it's all about messaging, and something that the Republican Party in the past, and thankfully I can say that's not an issue anymore, you know, we are pivoting on that issue, is just that we have not communicated. I feel like we've kind of used the same playbook over and over, and we know that doesn't work, and, you know, demographics are shifting, the problems out there, the challenges facing America are shifting, and we need to step up and address that. And President Trump did a number of those things during his administration, and I'm very excited with what we have coming now with J.D. Vance, who's also a young Republican, on the ticket. It'll be the first young Republican we'll be electing to the vice presidency.
Meaning the group, not just that he is young and also a Republican.
Yes. So, yeah, so actually, I should say in that for our group, we are the official Young Professional Auxiliary, the Young Republican National Federation of the RNC, and it's folks 18 to 40. So that really, that, you know, young professional arm of the 20s and 30s. And so he is a young Republican. And I think having folks like that, having folks who are in, you know, the legislature or in Congress, even, you know, running for school board, I think seeing more young people step up in the Republican Party, you know, circling the wagons behind those individuals also helps inspire and carry the torch to, you know, this generation. It's not the next generation. It is right now. It is, folks, actually surprisingly kind of funny, you know, how old millennials are.
I know.
You
know? Yeah. Don't you have to tell me.
And Gen Z is, you know, now right behind us. And so, like, we are out there actively trying to build our lives. And, you know, we're worried about safe communities. We're worried about, you know, the border. We're worried about what's going on in the rest of the world. And to have folks who are stepping up to the plate to carry the torch of the Republican Party, who are in that young Republican age range, I think is absolutely critical to the success our party is now having.
Do you think is there any kind of departure on the priorities or emphasis that you feel like young Republicans, either the official group or general population, is it different than the current platform? Is it different than what's been the last couple election cycles?
So I think it is just about how we get that out there. I feel that the platform, it fits. I feel the platform that we're bringing to the table this convention is going to work really well. And it's actually something I've spoken to even on the floor of the assembly, is that it's kind of a unique overlapping of issues where whether you're just beginning in life and you're starting off trying to get out there, you know, post-college and build a life for yourself, or you're retiring and you're on fixed income, you are in a position where you just don't have as much coming in. You're just starting off. And so those kitchen table issues affect both those demographics at the same time. And so it's like we can use the same platform. We just have to message it out to, you know, those different demographics and say, like, hey, we're fighting for you. We're looking out for you on these things. And I feel like we'll have that same success. And a lot of people have been like, oh, wow, that's actually, it's very true. It's the same issues. It's the perspective's just a little bit different, but, like, they impact people the same way. So I think it's all just about, we have to have people who are willing to take that message out there. And that's also the other thing that young Republicans really do, is we knock a lot of doors. We assist campaigns. We go out on the weekends. And it's all, you know, very volunteer-driven, and a lot of us also then are on the campaigns then as well. So, like, we're willing to step up and then take that message to folks. So all we have to do is pick up that torch and get it out to people so they can hear that message and the platform the Republican Party already has.
Well, that's going back to what you were saying before about the age and the, you know, young people getting involved. And is there a challenge, not just with the Republican Party, but the Democrats as well, that we look at the top of the party? And the top of both parties is aged, to say the least. So what is the challenge then for young Republicans like yourself to keep knocking away at that ladder so you're moving up. And sometimes it's okay to say, all right, you've done a great job, but it's time to sit down, you know?
Yeah, I feel like that's definitely always the challenge of newer folks on the block, and even people who are just getting involved, even if they're in their, you know, their 40s or 50s, if even at the county party, you know, level, you know, you're looking to get involved. There's always that, well, you got to wait your turn, you got to put in your time. And to a certain extent, you know, I don't think anybody is owed anything, you know, just because we're young and full energy doesn't mean we should be just given the opportunity either. But, you know, when we step up, we're willing to volunteer, really, you know, willing to grasp a hold of leadership positions or run for office ourselves. I think that needs to be embraced, and I've been very happy, especially here in the state of Wisconsin, that the Republican Party, both at the state level as well as at the congressional county levels, have definitely embraced that. I think we've seen a renaissance, especially at the local candidate level, whether it's judges. Like, I know out in Waukesha County, we've elected several times now very young. So they would be young Republicans, but obviously they're nonpartisan. But still, yeah, they're not the traditional, you know.
Which positions?
So like circuit court judge. Okay. So it's, you know, it's not the, well, I've had, you know, 30 years in law and I'm looking to kind of hang her up and that seems like a nice retirement gig. We have people who are young, they're fresh, they're excited to step up and to serve, and they are winning. That people are enjoying that message, because I think it is shaking up kind of what has been the establishment, and I think it's a problem both parties have been dealing with, and I'm excited to see that we've been pivoting on that here in Wisconsin.
One last quick question, Nick, before we let you go. You talked about a kind of a perception of Republicans. Is there a stigma attached when you are a young person and you're a Republican? Are you battling harder against that stereotype than, say, you know, a 60-year-old person who's been a Republican for a long time? You're a young man. If, like, when it comes to dating or making friends, and you're, oh, everybody's getting along, and then is there an issue once you say, hey, but this is what I believe politically?
I definitely have faced that in the past, and I know some of my other friends and colleagues have as well, but I think it's definitely changing. I think part of it is just being, outspoken and unintimidated on the issue, and some of the keynotes that we've had, not only for the RNC floor, but also at our breakfast, have talked about how, it's kind of become the age-old saying of, oh, the things we don't talk about in public are religion and politics.
Right.
And I think we need more of that. We need more open dialogue, even if we're going to disagree on some of the issues. We need to have those discussions, and we need to be able to talk about that, because I feel like that's a lost art in America. And I think something that the young Republicans have been really successful at is having the courage to run, to stick your neck out there, to talk about these issues, or support candidates and speaking on their behalf, so that we can bring those issues out there, so we can start to break down some of those walls and stereotypes, not only about young people, but I would say just having those uncomfortable conversations and making sure that they're maybe a little less uncomfortable, because I think, quite frankly, for both sides of the aisle, yeah, I think it would be for the betterment of America if we could have an honest conversation and dialogue without having to always, come to arms all the time.
Agreed. Nick, thanks for being here. Nick Rettinger.
Rettinger.
Sorry, Nick. Nick Rettinger is the current Young Republican National Federation Vice Chair, and he is the Wisconsin State Representative for the 83rd Assembly District. Nick, enjoy the rest of the convention. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Nick.
Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Sure. And when we come back, there's more. It's Spanning the State.
I believe it's time for me to fly.
Indeed, that means we've come to the end of the show. We still got a couple minutes, though, to review some of the fun things that happened yesterday.
Yeah, nice things. A couple of, we'll highlight the highlights of the Republican National Convention before we come back tomorrow for the final day. This was nice. Reince Priebus called Milwaukee a world-class city. That coming, a couple weeks after there were other comments made that Milwaukee maybe not the greatest. Host Committee Chairman Reince Priebus welcomed delegations in Wisconsin during his speaking slot yesterday. He encouraged visitors to order a basket of cheese curds, drink a few beers, and experience the, quote, beautiful beaches of Lake Michigan. Milwaukee is a world-class city, and Wisconsinites are some of the kindest people you will ever meet. Thanks, Reince.
I agree with that.
That was very nice.
I found myself feeling especially Wisconsin nice.
I've adopted that mentality. I'm saying hello to everybody.
Yeah,
comedians
don't like the Chicago folks. There's a different attitude down there. Unless you're talking to East Coast people. East Coast people make Chicago people, and they're like, "You're so nice."
Yeah. So I've adopted that. Everybody's nice. This was not surprising news, but they put it in the paper that there was Mitch McConnell went to Red Rock. He went there with Ron DeSantis. They were having some big parties there. You know, Red Rock has the mechanical bull.
I know it well. I have some engagement photos on that bull.
Do you?
I do.
How long were you able to stay up?
Well, it wasn't technically on.
Okay.
There's fake riding that's happening between Mike and I.
I was on one once. It went up, came down. The next time it went up, I just kept going. But no surprise, Mitch McConnell did not ride the bull, even though they had waived all the charges. Everybody could ride for free. Mitch, probably smarter to just say thanks, but no thanks.
No thanks.
I'm 106. I don't need to be on a mechanical bull.
This one I liked because if you spend enough time here, you'll see a bumper sticker that says, "I closed Wolski's."
Okay.
A lot harder to do this week because Wolski's is one of the bars that is staying open until 4 a.m.
Good for them.
My dad usually says nothing good happens after midnight. I certainly believe nothing good happens after 2 a.m. I can vouch for that.
As a guy who used to bounce,
4 a.m. feels excessive. Nothing needs to be open at 4 a.m.
No, I used to bounce at a 4 a.m. bar, and it was not after midnight. Forget it. It's
nothing
dicey.
Good.
But listen, if you want to hang out, I'm sure there's a lot of delegates who are looking to have a good time.
I know.
Time.
I want to know who's still out at four and where. Like, who's at Lacage?
I'm betting it's the young Republicans, not the old Republicans. They're
never
in
know.
Bed. They're in bed sleeping. What do we got on tap for tomorrow?
All right, we got Allison Prang, who is the head of the RNC host committee. We got Peggy Williams Smith and more. I don't know. We got a whole day to figure
out. It's going to be a great show, yeah. So we'll talk to you again tomorrow. Wisconsin's Afternoon News comes your way next. We'll be back at the Republican National Convention tomorrow. It's Spanning the State.